Yep, we're getting pretty excited about it. It's the Chiefs and the Texans Sunday, the divisional round of the AFC playoffs. The Chiefs, surprisingly, a 9.5-point favorite against a team that they lost to back in Week 6 on October the 13th. And here to talk about the rematch is a guy that knows the Chiefs better than about anybody in the area or across the country. It's Matthew Derrick of Chiefs Digest joining us again on the Sports Ticket. Matt, how you doing, man?
Not too bad. Wade, how are you doing today?
I'm doing good. I'm stoked. I'm ready to go. If I could still play football, I think I'd be ready to go out there and try to hit somebody, but it wouldn't be pretty. I'd probably get laid out and have a concussion, so it's a good thing that I'm behind the mic. But I'm looking forward to this one. It should be a lot of fun, and to me, it's kind of the changing of the guard. There's no Brady. There's no Manning. There's no Roethlisberger. There's not even a Joe Flacco. You've got Deshaun Watson, Lamar Jackson, and Mahomes still alive, and this should be a good one coming up on Sunday.
Yeah, a lot of new faces. Young guys getting some playoff experience. But, you know, you look at it, of the eight teams that are left, the old guard in this round is Patrick Mahomes and the Chiefs. Yeah. They're the only ones that have made it back this far from last year. So you got to think that gives the Chiefs a little bit of advantage, that they've been in this situation before. They've got some guys who have some experience. But it's also a team full of guys who don't have a championship yet. So there's some motivation there.
What are some things when you go back and you look at the game back in Week 6 with the Texans won 31-24, Chiefs had a 17-3 lead. I remember a couple of key plays. One, when Mahomes threw an interception when Kelce was tackled, picked up the flag, and ended up being a pick, and the Chiefs are up 17-9 at that point. Texans went down and scored, and then, of course, the strip sack and fumble with 32 seconds to go before halftime. Texans cashed that in and went up 23-17. But what are some things that you remember from that game in Week 6 on October 13th where the Chiefs only had the ball for about 20 minutes, and how do you think things will play out differently on Sunday?
Yeah, I mean, you look at it and you think, you know what, on one hand, the Texans probably could have scored even more points. Will Fuller had a couple of big drops,
yeah.
And that's a guy who doesn't normally do that. But then, you know, the Chiefs were up 17-3. They had a big lead in the second quarter. They were rolling. Patrick Mahomes tweaks his ankle and didn't really look comfortable after that. And the Texans did a really good job of taking away the Chiefs' run game. It kind of forced the Chiefs to go to the P and the RPO, and it kind of turned into a pass-heavy game, which you think would normally favor the Chiefs, but, you know, you do that, and you get a couple of three and outs, which the Chiefs did, and then, you know, that ends up this lopsided game of you know, controlling the clock to favor the Texans, and the Chiefs really got out of their rhythm after that big lead, and the Texans just continued to whittle away, and that's how they ended up winning that game. The other thing that stands out about that game, though, is just who was not there for the Chiefs. Chris Jones, Anthony Hitchens doesn't play in that game. Sammy Watkins, Eric Fisher, Andrew Wiley, they're not in that game. This team didn't have Terrell Suggs in. So there's a lot of, you know, there was a lot of pieces missing in that game for the Chiefs that they're going to have this time around.
Yeah, Tyreek Hill was limited on some of the snaps. I believe that was his first game back as well. It is. It is interesting to see who's back, and I don't know exactly who did J.J. Watt play in that game in Week 6?
He did, yeah.
Okay. So the Texans probably don't have as many guys that were inactive for that game as the Chiefs did, and that'll be interesting the second time around. You know, it sounds simple, doesn't it, when you say, well, you know, you look at the teams that won over the weekend, especially in the AFC, and these are teams that can run the ball. They're able to play defense against the run and quarterbacks that don't make a lot of mistakes. The Chiefs don't really fit that bill because they haven't been that good against the run this year, although they have played better, certainly defensively, the last 6 weeks. And they don't really run the ball that super well. Is that a reason to be concerned going the rest of the playoffs?
Well, I think you hit it on the head. If the Chiefs do stumble, that will probably be, you know, their downfall, is that they haven't been able to establish that strong run game. Now, if there's a silver lining, you look and you think, you know what, maybe this is a team that's improving. You know, over the last six games, they've averaged about 110 yards rushing per game. That's up significantly. They were averaging, I think, under 90 yards a game during that stretch where they didn't have Eric Fisher. And that's an interesting stat. I mean, when Eric Fisher plays this year, the Chiefs are 8-0. They're 4-2, I guess. No, 2-4. 4-4. I can't keep track anymore. It's too early in the morning, apparently, for me, after some long night. You know, that's a difference. And, you know, and Eric Fisher is part of the fact that they're able to protect Mahomes. They gave up a lot, much fewer sacks with Eric Fisher in there. He's a big part of the offensive line that I think people overlook. And the offensive line as a whole has had so many injuries that's affected the run game. But at the same time, they still don't have that home run hitter. Yeah, Damian Williams has a couple of big runs, but they don't have anyone that fits the Kareem Hunt mold. Yeah. And when Kareem Hunt was in that backfield, that is when this team was absolutely electric. They need a guy like that. Every team does, and some teams have a guy. I mean, Derrick Henry's a guy like that can control a game. But that's what this Chiefs offense lacks right now, is just that dominating back who can take over a game so many different ways.
And we mentioned that strip sack and fumble before halftime. It was Cam Irving that was beat on that play. And if Eric Fisher's in, maybe that doesn't happen. Maybe the Chiefs win the first time around. Matthew Derrick of Chiefs Digest is our guest today on the Sports Ticket as we preview the Chiefs and Texans coming up on Sunday. Now, we've talked about injuries, and having Fisher back is big, and that's an interesting stat. I was not aware of that. They're 8-0 when he's in the lineup, so that bodes well. Hopefully he doesn't get banged up early in the game on Sunday. Now, one key injury that we need to discuss is Juan Thornhill. He unfortunately torn his ACL in the final game of the season. What did the Chiefs do to compensate and deal with Thornhill's absence coming up this weekend?
Yeah, I mean, they're going to have to deal with it a couple of different ways. Now, that one option is clearly that you just put Armani Watts, or most likely maybe a Jordan Lucas takes some snaps back there, but they just purely fill that role, and you leave everybody else where they are. I think there's belief that the Chiefs will probably fill in a little bit by maybe throwing Kendall Fuller back there a little bit, but the loss of Thornhill is a pretty big deal, because even though the Chiefs have bigger names and maybe some more critical pieces on defense, his emergence on the back end of that secondary is really what enabled them to start moving Tyrann Mathieu around so much and put him in some positions that defenses have to deal with. And you could leave him on a single high in the secondary. He could handle that. You could give him a little bit of help sometimes. But the fact that they trusted Juan Thornhill back there was what said, Tyrann Mathieu can play in the box a lot more. He can play up close to the line of scrimmage. He can maybe play in the slot. He can go on blitzes. And when they find, Steve Spagnuolo finally figured out that role for Tyrann Mathieu, it's when this defense, really started taking shape. And now we got to see, do they still feel comfortable enough that they don't need to drop Mathieu back into coverage more and have him on the back end, and if they still can use him up closer to the line of scrimmage? Because with the way that they've been moving him around, really the second half of the season, that's something that offenses have to deal with. And dealing with Tyrann Mathieu, it's a distraction. And I think it's what has really helped make this defense as effective as it's been in the closing up the season.
And that leads me to the next question. And I'm kind of caught on this a little bit. I think it probably lies somewhere in between. But the Chiefs defense has looked really good, and the last six games they've been fantastic. At the same time, you look at the teams that they've played, there's no good offensive team in those 6 weeks. They played at the Chargers in Mexico City, and that was the game that Rivers had four interceptions, which, of course, the Chiefs did a good job of making those plays. Oakland at home, the Raiders were a disaster that day. Chiefs, give them credit, made plays. At New England, we know New England's issues this whole year offensively. Denver with a rookie quarterback coming into town on a snowy day, which the Chiefs offense didn't seem to have any problems with it. At Chicago, the Bears have been challenged offensively all year long. And then the Chargers at the end of the year, and we know the problems the Chargers had all season, went 5-11. So I'll ask you, is this Chiefs defense really that much? I mean, is it significantly better to where you can sit here and say this is a defense that is going to continue to do what they've been doing in the playoffs? Or do we sit here and say, it's better, but the jury's still out because they haven't played a really good offense since, and I don't even know if the Titans are a good offense, but since they gave up 35 to Tennessee?
I am buying, and maybe a little bit of it, when you frame it that way, it's good to point out that the Chiefs defense, it over the last 6 to 8 weeks of the season, I mean, depending on where you had the cutoff point, they're either the best scoring defense of the league, or one of the top three or four. Mm-hmm. And that's still a pretty good stretch over that period of time. Mm-hmm. And you're right, they haven't necessarily faced some tough offenses, but to their credit, they throttled those offenses.
Yeah.
The Raiders don't get the 9 points until they get a garbage touchdown at the end. They smothered Philip Rivers for the most part in both those games. That's a good quarterback. Drew Lock, finishing up the season, had four really, really good games and one bad one, and that was against the Chiefs. So, you know, there's hope out there, I think, that, you know, that these numbers are legitimate. But, you know, look at the broader picture. Let's say it's not. I mean, let's say that this Chiefs team isn't as good as maybe the numbers say over the second half of the season. Maybe they're not a top three defense. Maybe they're top 10, though.
Yeah.
And coupled with this offense, you know, a year ago, going into the offseason, if you said the Chiefs were going to have a top 10 defense, Patrick Mahomes, you'd say that's a Super Bowl team.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I'll add one more thing. The Patriots had to run a couple of trick plays in order to score their touchdowns in that game
in
Foxborough. And this is the thing that I really, I have to get over it. It's really hard for me to get over it. And the only way I'm going to really truly get over it is if the Chiefs win the Super Bowl. And that is, we were clamoring for this well before last season, that the Chiefs needed to make a change at defensive coordinator. They stuck with Bob Sutton, and I think most people knew that was probably a mistake. Steve Spagnuolo was unemployed. He was available. The Chiefs could have had him as their defensive coordinator last year. You look at how great the offense was last year, but it had to carry the load. The defense was really so bad. And we saw that happen in the AFC title game and couldn't get off the field. And, of course, the offsides penalty and all that good jazz. You know, last year the Chiefs had the number one overall seed home field advantage in the AFC, and they went 12-4. This year they're 12-4. The number two seed still might have to go to Baltimore. Offense isn't as explosive per se, but the defense, as you and I have talked about, is vastly improved. I've gone on record as saying that even though the Chiefs will probably have to go on the road and win a game to make the Super Bowl, that this team is more equipped and it has the better shot of making it and winning a Super Bowl than last year's team. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I would. I mean, and obviously I think the biggest reason is defensively, but yeah, there's a reason on offense, too, to be somewhat optimistic. And you look at all the numbers, and there's a concern on the offense that this team is not as deadly in the red zone as it was a year ago. And it's the numbers aren't as explosive. Now, a big part of the reason why this offense doesn't average as many points as it did a year ago is it doesn't have to.
Right.
They had so many track meets last year that I think I counted up in the off season that, you know, this team probably scored 9 touchdowns last season that were not necessary. I mean, they shouldn't have been had the defense played halfway decent.
Yeah.
You know, they were just touchdowns they were forced to score late to come back in games that if the defense had done its job wouldn't have to. This time around they don't have to score as often, but they've also shown the ability to move at different speeds. If they want to go out and run an 8.5-minute drive against the Chicago Bears, they've done that. You know, if they need to move more quickly, they need to get down the field in 2 minutes, they've shown the ability to do that. And that's, I think, beneficial for a lot of reasons. I mean, one is that it's obviously helped them keep the defense off the field. This defense, looking at the number of plays that they've played, they've played about a game and a half less than last year's team did, just based on snap counts. And that's a big deal. But within a game, the ability for this offense to move at different speeds, I think it does make it an offense that's more built to win than maybe last year's offense was.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, I mean, there's that glaring weakness that we talked about in the backfield, that if you can't run the ball in the red zone, that makes it tough sometimes. And if this team goes out of the playoffs and settles for field goals instead of touchdowns,
yeah,
that's going to be a recipe for disaster.
I agree with you. Matthew Derrick, Chiefs Digest, our guest here today on the Sports Ticket. We were talking about this before the season. In fact, I think we had you on either right before the season or at the beginning of the season, and we were discussing how the Chiefs don't – you, if you're a Chiefs fan, you don't want Patrick Mahomes to throw for 5,000 yards and 50 touchdowns. And the reason being, if he does, that means the defense isn't any better. And we were talking before the season that you would take 35 to 4,000 yards. You would take 30 touchdowns instead of 50. You'd take 6 or 7 interceptions instead of 12. And if those are the numbers of Patrick Mahomes, either one of two things have happened. One, the defense is better. Or two, he was hurt and missed some games and still put up huge numbers. You look at Patrick Mahomes' numbers, and I think some people think, well, Mahomes is having a down year. Well, yeah, statistically, of course he is. I mean, it's be hard for anybody to do what he did last year and repeat it. He completed 66% of his passes last year. This year, 66%. Last year, 5,100 yards. This year, just over 4,000. Touchdown passes in half. He had 50 last year, 26 this year. Interceptions, 12 last year, 5 this year. Cut that in more than half. And keep in mind, he did miss a couple of games. Those numbers probably would have been 4,500 yards, 30 touchdowns, maybe 6 interceptions. And the passer rating's down just a little bit. But, you know, I hear people say, well, you know, I don't know about the offense now. I'm a little bit worried about it. And the Chiefs have struggled in the red zone, as you referred to. But at the same time, when you look at the Chiefs, you have to consider what some defenses are doing, too. They are taking away the deep ball for the most part, and they're trying to force Patrick Mahomes to check the ball down. And I'm sure that is hard at times for Patrick to do because he has a gunslinger's mentality. And I think it works both ways because I've heard some people say, oh, my God, Andy Reid's gonna is changing Patrick Mahomes. They're checking down. We don't want to become Alex Smith again. Why is he checking down? Why is he throwing the screen pass, the same play three times in a row? Why aren't they taking shots down the field? But some people lose track of what are the defenses doing? What are they presenting to the Chiefs? And isn't that something that people overlook?
Yeah, I think so. I completely agree. You know, I mean, defenses are going to try and figure you out. And that was something that, you know, was that, you know, Patrick Mahomes and Andy Reid talked about quite a bit during the offseason, which is, you know, understanding the teams now had a full year of tape on Patrick Mahomes that they could figure out if they were going to go out and try and see if they could stop him. And I think at times you've seen that has worked. I think you've seen that the teams have been able to take away some of the stuff that the Chiefs love to do the most, and that's forced them to adapt. And certainly some of the explosiveness of Mahomes with his numbers absolutely stems from the injuries. I mean, he sprained the ankle in week one and was really never healthy at any point. I mean, he was on the injury report every single week this season until week 17, whether it was the ankle, the knee, or the hand. And, you know, maybe another one of those silver linings is that the injuries did force the Chiefs to call a different game plan and to put Mahomes in some different situations. And that's probably helped him grow as a quarterback too a little bit. And he will say that hey, one of the things he wanted to do going into the season was, you know, take some of the plays that are available, take what the defense gives him and not try and force things. And I think you've seen that in the interception numbers. I mean, he's got better ball control because he's not forcing things. But the final aspect that I think that's benefited this team is that they've had fewer three and outs. That's what happens sometimes when you just put the ball in the air and you take some deeper shots down the field. There's going to be times that you just go out there and you get out the field in 45 seconds. And that feeds over to the defense and having to play all those plays that we talked about. So there's a lot about this offense that you could look at and say, yeah, it's not as explosive as last season, but maybe it's more effective than it was last season at winning games, especially at the kind of games you have to win in the playoffs.
Think about that for a moment. You mentioned that Mahomes has been on the injury report almost every week, and really the time he was the healthiest and played the greatest was the first half against Jacksonville, where the Chiefs looked like they didn't skip a beat, and you're sitting there going, my goodness, he might throw for 5,000 again. Think about this for a second. He's on the injury report almost every week. He missed two games. He still threw for 4,100 yards, 26 touchdowns, just 5 interceptions, and completed 66% of his passes. Just imagine if he's, you know, 100% healthy, which I'm guessing he probably won't be on Sunday because I believe he's still wearing that brace on that knee, right?
Yeah, it's hard to tell, but it has looked like he hasn't wearing it. Yeah, he hasn't been wearing it as much, and it's not as heavy a brace as it was earlier. So there's clearly a lot of comfort that he's getting with that knee right now.
And that's a great sign, certainly. Andy Reid, you kind of referred to it in a way. I think Andy Reid's had to evolve as a coach a little bit this year because of trying to protect Patrick Mahomes. I pointed out a couple games earlier in the year where the Chiefs just basically, I thought, gave up on running the football when they didn't have to. I even go back to the Texan game where they didn't really try to run the ball, even when they're up 17-3. And I was thinking, you know, you got a left tackle that has some problems, Cam Irving. If you can protect the quarterback, the way you protect them is being able to run the ball and don't give up on the run. Now, if you try to run it and run it and run it, and you can't run it, that's just part of it, and then you have to go to something else. But it does seem like Andy Reid, I don't want to say he's more conservative per se, but he has evolved to the point where I think he values more so now. I don't know if this is something, I would think he's known it all along, but sometimes when you get controlling an offense, calling plays, and everything goes so well last year, I think it's it's only human nature to go, okay, let's go for the big play. Let's go for this and go for that. But there's no doubt he's dialed it back, as you mentioned, in regards to protecting Mahomes. And now the last few weeks with the defense getting better, that allows the Chiefs to play more clock. It allows them to grind it out. And with Damian Williams back, and I know that might be a little bit boring for some people, and it's not as sexy as what the Chiefs did last year, but you have to be able to do that to win a championship.
Yeah, I mean, it's sometimes it's boring football, but it's winning football.
Yeah.
Don't look any further than the Baltimore Ravens and what they do. I mean, that's a team that runs the football an awful lot, and it's been brutally effective for them. I mean, what, that's the most rushing yards in league history over there? And they got a quarterback who can run the ball effectively, and it's not pretty. It's you know, again, sometimes it can be pretty ugly out there, but it's effective. And as much as the NFL is a passing league, we all hear about that, and the analytics will say, you know what, you know, most of the time you're better off throwing the football than not. There's a sweet spot. I mean, there really is, because, you know, the part of the game that's not played with statistics has, you know, you do have, you know, just the overall team tempo and the game tempo. And sometimes that means, you know what, you're better off going out and trying to control the ball for 6 minutes and run some play on the clock. If he's over a field goal, that's okay. You don't always want to, but there's times when that's appropriate for the offense to just be able to go out and take command of the game and dictate terms to the defense, and that's how you win games. Last year, it was the opposite way. I mean, it was really, you know, defenses, the other teams that were dictating the terms, and if they got the Chiefs to play their game, Chiefs were going to lose. This year, I think that the Chiefs have an ability to play different games, and that certainly a lot of it stems back to Andy Reid. I mean, you don't win as many football games in a career as he has without having the ability to adapt. We've seen him adapt as far as just, you know, from year to year, but I think we've seen him adapt, you know, in season. And you know, so many people I've talked to this week, you know, the question has been, you know, what's Andy Reid got planned this week? Because you've got to figure that it's the playoff time. He's got this tremendous amount of speed out there. He's got to have something up his sleeve that we haven't seen this season, that you're going to start seeing in the playoffs now, that he wants to pull out.
Do you believe that coaches win or lose playoff games? And I'll preface this and set it up for you. Because you go back, Doug Peterson, the Philly special, having the guts to call that. You know, I look at Mike Vrabel in Tennessee. I thought it might come back and bite them. They had a 4th-and-4, and I thought they should have gone for it. They didn't. Then they played the whole clock game, milking a minute 46 off before they punted it, which I thought was hilarious. And then they ended up getting a touchback anyway. The Texans were pretty conservative when they could have finished that game in regulation after coming back 16-0. J.J. Watt was celebrating going off the field when they got a stop. All the offense had to do is get a first down. They run a quarterback sneak, which was they needed to get about a yard and a half, which was pretty conservative, and they didn't get it. Do you believe that coaches in these big moments, when they get in the playoffs, treat things a little bit differently? And do you think the coaches that are aggressive, and we saw John Harbaugh very aggressive the first time at Arrowhead, going for it a lot. Bill O'Brien went for it on that final drive in Arrowhead, didn't settle for a long field goal, and they went for it and picked up the first down. I think it was a 4th-and-4, 4th-and-5, and they went ahead and closed out the game. Do you think the coaches, the way they're aggressive in the regular season, do you think they'll have the same kahunas to do this in the playoffs? And do you think they can win or lose a playoff game?
Yeah, you know, I mean, the conventional wisdom, I think, in the postseason is that the team that plays tougher and can play faster is going to win the game. And it's probably right most of the time. But you're right. I mean, aggression seems to also win quite a bit too. And the thing is that when you're the underdog, it's a lot easier to be aggressive than when you're the favorite.
Yeah.
And that's where I think that, you know, sometimes you're willing to take more chances. Andy Reid, I think, you know, maybe big challenge in the postseason has been that he's been the favorite a lot.
Yeah.
And I do. I mean, I think it's a little bit more difficult when you are the favorite to take some of those chances. You know, I go back to Sean Payton making a decision for the onside kick in the Super Bowl.
Yep.
I think he could afford to do that because, you know, the Saints were underdog in that game. I think it's easier when you're in that situation. You know, Andy Reid, if he makes it the AFC Championship game, now he's going to be the underdog most likely. you know, does that give him maybe a little bit more freedom? Maybe it's, you know, he says, hey, now it's time to roll the dice because we got a team that, you know, we're in a tough situation here. We need something on our side. Maybe that's true. But you're right. I mean, at this time of year, aggression can certainly pay off in a big way if you're successful.
And would that lead to one of the concerns you may have with the Texans coming into town? They got to be playing the disrespect card. I mean, they're a 9.5-point underdog, even though they went in Arrowhead and won in week six, that they are the underdog coming into this game, and perhaps they could do what you just said, play a little bit looser and roll the dice a little bit more?
Yeah, I mean, I think that is certainly the scary thing about the Houston Texans team that you got to look at as a Chiefs fan is that, yeah, this is a team coming in with nothing to lose. I mean, they are this big underdog, which I don't entirely understand, mm-hmm. you know, why we're seeing like this 8-9-point spread. That seems like a big number to me. But you're right. I mean, this is a team that can come in and really roll the dice. I mean, they've advanced a little, maybe, I think, further than maybe they thought they would this year, with all the turmoil that they had in the offseason with the front office, and they've had some injuries as well. So I think that they're in a position right now where they can say they can lay it all on the line, and that's sometimes a risky, you know, a dangerous team is a team that is just playing with house money, and they kind of are at this point.
What's really interesting about the Texans is they've had the up-and-down season. They went 11-5. I heard somebody on the radio say the other day that the Texans' best game was at Arrowhead, and I disagree with that because I remember the day after the game sitting here going, the Texans could have done much more. They had the ball for 40 minutes. They could have scored more points. As you mentioned earlier, Deshaun Watson threw two interceptions, one in the end zone. It was ill-advised. Will Fuller dropped two touchdown passes. I mean, the Texans, I thought, made lots of mistakes in that game. They had some penalties, and they still won the game. And granted, the Chiefs didn't play that well, and plus they were missing some key pieces. But the Texans have been hard to figure out. They're Jekyll and Hyde, and I think that makes them dangerous in the playoffs because they play well. They beat the Patriots. That was a good win. They played the Saints right to the final wire, the first game of the year. I know it was a long time ago. They you know, they got blown out by the Broncos. I don't know what happened there. Then the Bills, they look awful the first half, and then all of a sudden you see them play like they're more capable of doing. I guess that's one reason to believe the Chiefs are going to win is the Texans can't put together a full, consistent game. But at the same time, they've got Deshaun Watson, and we saw what he did on that final play to set them up for a field goal to win against Buffalo.
Yeah, and they have been Jekyll and Hyde, and I think a big part of it has been, you know, defensively, you know, they didn't have J.J. Watt most of the season, and that's their game record. I mean, that's the guy that they need, and so they've overcome that. I mean, they have an 11-5 record when you don't have Watt most of the campaign. It's a pretty big deal. But I think just right now, I think it's a question of just, you know, how much do they have him? I mean, he looked pretty good. I think played a little bit more than I expected in the wild card game. But, you know, if we'll see how he's able to bounce back. You know, after getting the first action in a while, sometimes that means the second game's a little bit tougher. I think a big part of what, you know, the Texans are going to do defensively is going to depend on him. And because the Texans the last few seasons have had a good defense when J.J. Watt's on the field. This year, the numbers aren't there. They're not as strong defensively. They've had to win games a little bit more with the offense and maybe some sleight of hand at times. But if this team, you know, turns into a top 12 defense with J.J. Watt on the field, that was going to make things dramatically different and maybe a different team that we've seen the last few months.
All right, time for your predictions here. I'm going to let you help me pick the games this weekend. So let's start with, I don't remember which of, I think the 49ers and Vikings are the first one. You like the 49ers or the Vikings?
Yeah, you know, I should like the 49ers at home because the Vikings have some problems, but I like what the Vikings do defensively. I was impressed by the wild card win. If Kirk Cousins plays the way he played, I think they can go in and win that game.
So you're picking the Vikings?
I'm picking the Vikings.
Wow, interesting. All right. And let's see, the other NFC game, it's the Seahawks at the Packers. Who do you like in that one?
Once again, I should go with the home team, and Aaron Rodgers had a good season. I just have a hard time ever going against Russell Wilson and the Seahawks and what they're able to do defensively. It's a good team all around. It's got a lot of experience, and Russell Wilson makes that team go. So I'm going with the road team again, Seahawks.
I'm picking the Seahawks as well. So you've got the Seahawks hosting the NFC title game against Minnesota. Wow.
The 5-seed hosting the 6 would be a lot of fun.
That would be. All right, the AFC, you've got the Ravens and the Titans. Can the Titans knock off the Ravens?
There's a chance. I mean, there's certainly a chance, but once again, this is a big point spread for a reason. I think the Ravens' role in this one, maybe it ends up being closer than I think, but I think the Ravens roll pretty easily.
All right, and the last one we saved for last for a reason. Chiefs Texans. Who you picking? And give me a final score or a spread.
Yeah, I say that I think that the point spread's bigger than I think it should be, but actually I'm sticking right around where the point spread is. I think the Chiefs pulled this out 31-23.
All right, so they covered the spread. All right, time for the off-the-wall question, Matt. If you were the commissioner, not the commercial, if you were the commissioner of the National Football League, what one thing would you change about the National Football League? If you could do it right now, what would you change?
Oh, man, that is a good one, because I think I would probably just want to improve officiating 300%.
Oh, yeah.
But I don't know how to do that.
Right, right. Nobody does.
that's a really good question. I'm not sure. I mean, it would have to do something with the officiating, whether it's changing the way that they use replay, changing some of the rules, I don't know if full-time officials would work or not. Yeah, there's something that's got to change, because officiating has been as bad as it's ever been the last couple of seasons, and it needs to get better. I mean, it's hurting the product on the field, I think.
Well, I'm just hoping and praying that Jeff Triplett doesn't pop into the game on Sunday and make a horrible call like he did with the forward progress of Mariota when Derek Johnson lit him up like a Christmas tree. That was one of the worst calls I ever seen in my life, and there was also a fumble in the play that Chiefs recovered, and of course we know that didn't go the Chiefs' way. And there are some times where you feel like the Chiefs are a bit cursed or jinxed in the playoffs. Weird things happen, including last year. Offsides penalty on Dee Ford, or they're going to the Super Bowl. I think the overtime, a lot of people were all crazy last year about how, and the Chiefs, of course, want to change it, where both teams get the ball in overtime. And I do get that. And I would have liked to see Mahomes have the ball in overtime. And just like I would have liked to see Drew Brees try to answer what the Vikings did the other day. But yet it's a team sport. And so shouldn't defense be just as important as offense? And I know it stinks to decide a game on a coin flip, but I argue you don't decide the game on a coin flip. You decide it on the field, and your defense just wasn't good enough.
Yeah, I mean, that's always going to be the argument people are going to say, is that, hey, if you want to win in overtime, get a stop. But then again, I mean, we'd probably feel differently if this was 30 years ago,
right.
But now that the superstars are the quarterbacks and every team's built around offense, I think the idea is that, it's the offenses that need to decide the game and not defenses, which, for a lot of teams aren't as good.
What is the difference if both teams get the ball one time and they both score a field goal or they both score a touchdown? Then how are you going to approach the rest of the overtime? Is it then sudden death? Because then we can argue, well, that's not fair. They had two possessions. We had one. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it would kind of end up in a perpetuating system like that. And as Chief's proposal, yeah, I mean, if it remained tied after both teams had a possession, then, yeah, it would go to sudden death after that. If you want some crazy overtime rules, look at what the XFL is going to be doing in their first season. It's kind of like hockey.
What are they doing? I don't even know. Fill me in.
It's going to be alternating possessions where each team gets a play from the 5-yard line.
Okay.
And if they score, then the other team gets a chance at the 5-yard line. And they alternate back and forth, basically a shootout style.
Yeah, it's like a penalty kick situation, isn't it?
Exactly.
I kind of like that. Interesting. Wow. What if they did it at the 10, though? Of course, then that'd mean they probably have to pass it no matter what. But at the 5, you'd have an option of maybe still running it.
Yeah, and then I think it's like if it's still tied after that, I think it's like they just go to I think they go from the 2 and it's alternating. There's something odd that they do, but yeah, there's a couple of things the XFL is going to do that might be interesting. There's a lot of stuff in that rules that are completely crazy.
Do you think college football overtime should be used in NFL, and would that be better than what we have right now?
I love college football overtime because it's exciting, and it's, I think, somewhat reasonable at least, in that it still matches kind of, what the game has been up to that point. I mean, a shootout style is kind of, you're fighting a Major League Baseball game by a home run derby.
Mm-hmm.
It's not the same game. I know that the concern with the NFL is that, yeah, you get into use a college format, you're going to get a 6 overtime game every once in a while that's going to run 5 hours, and you just get too many chances of injury. So I don't know that they're ever going to go to that format, but I personally like it. I think it's a lot of fun.
Well, both teams will get the same amount of possessions, and you just make them go for two right off the bat. There's no extra points, and I think you wouldn't have too many.
There's not really any complaints about the college football system that it's unfair. I mean, both teams are treated equally. It's just that it creates a lot more chaos as far as the timing of the game and how many plays you're going to play.
Right, absolutely. All right, let people know how they can read your work, Matthew.
Follow me on Twitter, mattderrick.com. Matt Derrick on Twitter, on twitter.com.
Sure.
Get a follow on Facebook, Chiefs Digest, and always chiefsdigest.com will get you everything.
Matt, you do a wonderful job. We know you're busy. We appreciate you taking the time to break down the matchup on Sunday, and hopefully we can talk to you later on in the playoffs and prepare for maybe a Super Bowl for the Chiefs in their near future.
Sounds like a plan.
Take care. Matthew Derrick, Chiefs Digest, our guest today on The Sports Ticket.